Doctor, you mean also with the experience with these men room?
Barney, in the operating, yes.
Doctor, did you fear you had been kidnapped?
Barney, I didn't use that word. I can only use that word intellectually. I did not feel that I had been kidnapped. But I think of kidnapping when you are being harmed.
Doctor, and you weren't harmed?
Barney, number doctor, you had no idea why this was done.
Barney, I was anxious to get home and look at my groin.
Doctor, you wanted to look at your groin.
Afraid that they had done something harmful?
131, Barney, I wanted to look. I thought, this is proof that something happened to me. And I was unsure. And I would waver, feeling that it can't be. And then I would think, but it did happen. And I would think, when is M. Arkansas? And this is what I thought. I get home, and look at my groin, I will touch whatever touched me, and see, if, there. But this thought was completely gone when he reached full consciousness. When he arrived home, he did examine himself, but had no memory whatever of the reason he did so.
Doctor, all right. Go on.
Barney, I drove home and I walked into the house. And I was too tired to bring in the luggage. And Betty got out of the car, and she took Delsie, and she let her relieve herself on the grass and brought her in. And I went into the bathroom and examined myself and saw nothing wrong. And I went into the bedroom, and I kept thinking that something is around me. I went to the window, and I looked up into the morning sky, and I went to the back door and opened it and looked at the sky. And I thought, something is around, somewhere. And Betty and I retired, talking. Wasn't that strange, whatever happened? And I could not remember anything that happened except that I was at Indian Head. And I went to bed. And when we woke up, we decided we would not ever tell anyone. And would only talk pictures, and about it to each other. And I said, but Betty, will you told, draw a picture of what you think you saw? And I will L. And we drew, they were identical. And Betty called her sister, and H. her sister.
Doctor, you mentioned something about spots on the car.
Barney Y. Away from THE telephony, and she said, where is the comm compass? And when Betty docks the TO me, IMDA telly get angry. And said, L. don't T know what you're talking about, Betty. And she said, the compass. The compass.
Where's the compass?
And I said, in the drawer, where IT always is. And she got it, and I was irritated because when she got EXID like this, she didn't Betty came pass, where is the apostrophe, 132, think to open the drawer and find it. And she went out of the house, and I went to the bedroom window, which is the front window of our house, and I thought, this thing is getting the best of Betty. And we'd better forget this as soon as possible. And stop remembering it. And she stormed into the house, and said, Barney. Come here, quick. And I walked out, and I looked at the compass when she placed it by the car. And I said, oh, this is ridiculous, Betty. After all, the car is metal, and any metal will attract and cause a compass to react this way. And she said, look what it does. And look at the spots on my car. And I looked, and there were large spots, shiny spots, on the trunk of the car. And I thought, what caused that? And I started to wipe one off, and she said, don't touch it. And I said, how can you know, if it isn't anything? And then I put the compass close to it. And the compass would spin and spin, and I could move the compass a few inches to a spot, to a part of the trunk and that did not have a spot, and the compass would drop down. And I could not understand this. And I knew I did not know anything about compasses. And I told Betty, it is nothing at all. The compass is a cheap compass. It is nothing to get alarmed about.
Doctor, what gave her the idea of getting the compass?
Barney, I did not know at that time.
Doctor, what did you find out?
Barney, she told me later that while she was talking with her sister had suggested that she get a compass and check and see magnetized or something or other. And this why she.
Doctor, if the car was, you say these spots made a compass needle spin?
Barney, When we would place a compass anywhere but on the spots, the needle would just flop down. 133, Doctor, you say these were shiny spots. What did you mean by that? Were the changes in the color of your car, or dust removed, or what? Barney, highly polished. Doctor, as if the car had been highly polished. Barney, yes, in those spots. Doctor, how big were they? Barney, about the size of half dollars, silver dollars. Doctor, did you try to remove them? Or did you try to wipe the rest of the car off? Barney, I never bothered with the spots. Doctor, was the rest of the car dusty? Barney, yes, it was. Doctor, and you didn't try to polish it out and see if it would duplicate those spots? Barney, there had been a rain. It rained the afternoon and evening after the Errol Middledot head back in Portsmouth. And whether rain had washed some of THE dust off, the shiny spots were still ill there, and I didn't TRE to dust them off. 13-1, Doctor, could these spots have been caused by the raindrops hitting and taking the dust off? Barney, no. The spots were shiny and in perfect circles. Doctor, well, what did you do? Just leave the spots? Barney, I did. Doctor, did you wash or polish your car at some reasonable time afterward? Barney, that was Betty's car, and she washes her car. I suppose she did. I didn't pay any more attention. Doctor, you don't know. How long did those spots stay, then? Barney, I shut them out. I don't know. I just stopped thinking about those spots. Doctor, you don't know when they disappeared or did they? Barney, yes, they're gone. Doctor, all right. We'll stop with this now. You will no longer think about what we talked about today, until I ask you to recall it. It will not trouble you at all. The eyes will not trouble you. You will not even think about them. Everything is comfortable, everything is relaxed. No need for anxiety, and nothing to worry about. Is that clear? Barney, yes. Doctor, you are comfortable, aren't you? 135, Barney, yes, I am. Doctor, and relaxed. And you are not worrying, and you will not worry. Every did today. You feel all right, now? Thing will be quite all right. And you and Betty will come back a week from today, just as you. The doctor is doubly assuring that Barney will not have the same problems he had during the week before. Barney, why? Yes, I do. Doctor, you are very comfortable. You will not worry at all. It is not going to affect your mind. It's an experience we'll talk about more, get it all cleared up. So you will have no fear, no anxiety. You will not think about this, it will not come to you anymore. Anything we talked about in these sessions, you will not think about, it will not trouble you. You'll be comfortable and relaxed. No pains, no aches, no anxiety. You'll be all right. Barney, yes. Doctor, you may wake now. Barney immediately wakes, feeling calm and refreshed. He has no memory whatever of what has gone on during the session. THE Dr. W.S., February 29, B.I.N.Y. was not certain if going to go along with H.I.S. request T.O. take Betty and give him a re-SD after the reaction he had had to the FLAR-SD session. In fact, he half expected, at the moment he went into the trance, that the doctor was merely doing it for the purpose of reinforcing high M for FURT11ER treatment. When he looked at HIS watch at the end of the second session, he was totally surprised to find that it was nearly 10 almost TWOHOURS later. He was even more startled at this, because, although he had reached the point where he could accept the loss of contact with any SENSE of at the start of this session on JJ6, time for an hour or so, he was sure that he would have some consciousness of a lapse of time that long. He felt very relaxed and comfortable as he came out of the trance and thought that he could remember talking about everything up to Indian Head, even within the trance. He seemed vaguely to be aware of the doctor's voice, but there was no clear remembrance of this. Actually, Barney later said, I did not have any recall as to the actual sessions under hypnosis. but I seemed to develop a tremendous recall apart from the sessions of hypnosis, as if suddenly, I could say, Betty, do you know the color of the rug at the motel we stayed at before we got to Montreal? It was pale blue. Things of that sort. And tying the dog to the radiator in the lavatory. I could remember things like that. And also, I remembered consciously, that is details of all the route numbers we had traveled. And after the second session, I recalled that we stopped at this quaint, farmhouse-type restaurant before Montreal. And the picture that came to my mind was so vivid. It was very quaint and attractive, lovely. Large fireplace, the side of the entire wall was a fireplace. We had a delightful breakfast there on the trip, the kind you would feed lumberjacks. Large chunks of ham, 3 or 4 eggs, if you wanted them. The picture came back so sharply. In other words, the picture of the conscious part of the trip was sharpened, even though I had no idea what I had said about the missing segment. Then, after this second session, I began having dreams. I had peculiar dreams, where I began dreaming about UFOs for the first time in my life. And I read a book about a doctor in a concentration camp in Germany who was in great distress, and I began to picture him as Dr. Simon, and this made the book acutely distressing to me. Because somehow, Dr. Simon had become sort of a close friend. He had become more than a close friend. He had become someone I loved, and I didn't want any harm to come to. 137. CHAPTERS. Even with the second session over, Dr. Simon reviewed the case in the first real light that had been thrown on the amnesic period. The case was breaking down into two separate phases, the first encounter, which was described as happening at Indian Head, and the second encounter, which apparently took place in a wooded section of a road off Route 3, involving a roadblock, and the bizarre description of an abduction aboard a spaceship. The evidence revealed in the two sessions with Bjarne seemed to indicate that he had undergone a severe emotional upheaval with an experience with an unidentified object, either real or interpreted to be real. The second experience, the abduction, had much less support from established reports of the UFO phenomenon and had to be considered as far less probable or unreal. Much more data would have to be available, able to weigh the scales convincingly as far as this was concerned. At this stage of the treatment, it appeared that part or all of the first encounter could be real. The second encounter had no valid precedent and appeared to be real, consequently reflecting back on the first experience. Before proceeding further with Bjarne, Dr. Simon decided to begin with Betty and probe her ekll. The doctor was working with facts, data, and logic rationcontextually. Test and add new data to confirm or reject as he went along. A physician must be skeptical, Hutt should have some working hypothesis to help evaluate the material revealed. IJS, the doctor was not interested in the UFO aspect, per se, except as an integral part of the Hill's experience. His presumption as he prepared to continue with Betty Hill on the following week was that the first encounter could have happened, the second encounter was unlikely. On her way into her first session, Betty Hill found herself actually looking forward to the experience. She had sat through two long sessions waiting for Bjarne, with some discomfort. She could not imagine herself getting as emotional as the first confused noises she had overheard during his first session seemed to indicate, and which she still had not mentioned to him. At Dr. Simon's office on March 7, 1962, the procedure was reversed. Bjarne was reinforced, and Betty remained in the office for the session to begin. She was not sure whether the doctor would put her in a trance or conduct a conscious interview. She had with her in her pocketbook a copy of the paper she had written out describing her dreams in detail. Driving in with Bjarne, she asked if she should show them to the doctor, but Bjarne suggested that she wait until the doctor asked for them. Bjarne's feeling about Betty's dreams was always one of extreme discomfort. He didn't like to think about them, didn't approve of Betty's preoccupation with them, didn't he believe they had any basis in reality. Although he had not directly told Betty, he didn't want Dr. Simon to be influenced by her dreams. Consequently, the detailed description of the dreams remained in Betty's pocketbook as she prepared for her session. She distinctly remembers hearing the cue words, as they were spoken by the doctor at her first long session on March 7. When he said them, Betty recalls, "It was always with the feeling of complete surprise to me. It's like suddenly someone slaps you." He says the words, "And whatever you're doing immediately stops." I was in the middle of putting a cigarette out and was conscious for a brief moment that I was trying to do this, and I couldn't do it. I actually think when you're going into a trance, you just don't immediately go. It's like going to sleep. Sort of like drifting. You slide into it. I think you really couldn't stop yourself if you tried." Betty heard the words distinctly. But almost immediately, she heard the words from the doctor, "You may wake up, Betty." In between the phrases, for over an hour, Betty re-experienced in full detail, 139, the incident at Cannon Mountain. What she revealed would not be known to her for weeks later. "Doctor, her eyes close, her head nods. You are in a deep, deep sleep. Deep asleep. Fully relaxed and far asleep. Very comfortable, fully relaxed, deep asleep. Far asleep, deep, deep sleep." With the repeated reinforcement of the induction she has experienced over the weeks, this was all that was required to put her into the trance state. "Now we're going to go back to your vacation in September of 1961 as you were coming from Niagara Falls to Montreal. You will remember what you did, and you will recall everything, all your experiences, all of your memories, all of your feelings, and you will give me all this in full detail. Now you're coming from Niagara Falls to Montreal. You're on your way home from vacation. Now tell me all that you experienced, all that you felt. You and your husband." Betty, her voice is less monotonous compared to Barney's fiat and vacant tone, but she is in a deep trance, as he was. "We're driving along, and the streets were wide, sun was shining. There were quite a few people in the streets. And I was looking at the houses and stores and windows." She speaks, however, with longer pauses, as if she waits for the scene to pass by her eyes before she relates it. "We stopped at a gas station to get directions, and the attendant spoke French and couldn't understand us. So we went to another garage, and they told us how to get back into the center of Montreal. And mink coat in the window for $895. Then we decided then we thought and we passed, I saw a, we'd find a hotel. But then we didn't know if they'd allow Delcy to be in a hotel. So, we'd look for a motel somewhere outside of Montreal. A place with a sign I thought said potato fritters, and the woman in this little drive-in restaurant came out and started, J.I.O., speaking in French. And I said I didn't understand French, and she kept saying she was sure I was French. But I'm not. And then I found out it wasn't potato fritters, it was potato chips. So we had the potato chips and coffee, and I can't remember hamburger, or one of each. If I had a hot dog or a, again, the struggle to remember minutiae, even if not significant. If she were instructed to, she could remember. Also, different details of the trip are selected for description by Betty than Barney chose to relate. She continues with her description of the basic story of the trip down through Canada to Colebrook and then on to Lancaster. Her story paralleling Barney's account of this portion of the journey. "Then, and we kept driving and looking around. The moon was bright, but not quite full, but very bright and large. And there was a star down below the moon, on the lower left-hand side of the moon. And then right after we left Lancaster I noticed that there was like a star, a bigger star up over this one. And it hadn't been there. And I showed Barney, and we kept watching it. It seemed to keep getting brighter and bigger looking. And we watched it for quite a while. And I was puzzled by it. Also curious. And while I was watching it, Delcy was getting somewhat restless. And then we went by a mountain that obstructed the view. and when I got to where I could see either star again, I thought it had moved. Dot, dot, again, Betty Hill rarely begins her sentences, in ordinary conversation, with and. Yet, like Barney, she persistently does so in trance. But I wasn't quite sure, so I kept watching it. And it seemed so it did move, and Dilsey was restless. So I told Barney we should let Dilsey out. And it would give us a chance to look at this star through the binoculars. We drive along, and we came to a parking space off the highway, one that had been built there. And I guess it was so people could drive off and look at the view. And there were woods all around. And there were a couple of trash barrels. And Barney said we should look out for bears. I got out of the car and put Dilsey on her leash and started to walk her. And I noticed that the star was definitely moving, so I went back to the car and got out the binoculars. And Barney took Dilsey, 141, and I was looking through the binoculars at the object. And Barney was saying it was a satellite, but it wasn't. It was moving fast, but it went in front of the moon, and I saw it. I saw it travel across the whole face of the moon, and it was odd-shaped. And it was flashing all different colored lights. Doctor, how far away would you say it was? Betty, I looked at the time, it wasn't close to us. But I could see it outlined, in front of the moon. And there were like searchlights rotating around it. Doctor, like those lights you see on police cars? Betty, no. You know what a searchlight looks like? Doctor, yes. Betty, and how is sort of they were like that? In a pencil line of light, and it swings around. Doctor, you could see those long beams? Betty, of white and tea were different colors. Doctor, were they usual colors that you know, or were they? Betty, yes, they were bright colors. Like a big height orange light, almost a reddish beam. And there was like a blue, well, you said like a LGHT on a police cruiser. You know, it was so matte-ing like that because when the cruiser light turns around somehow, and it flashes. Even though, they seem to see me out into a ray thing, somehow. All these deterrent kinds of LGHTs seem to be that same hash. 112, Doctor, there were colors other than red, amber and green? The doctor of course is referring to conventional lights used in this country on planes, vehicles and for traffic control. Betty, like a blue and like a flash. Flash, flash, flash. And I had never seen anything like it before. And it was moving quite fast. But I've never seen a satellite, but I've always thought of a satellite as traveling almost like a shooting star, maybe not quite as fast. But this wasn't traveling that fast. Well, when I saw it go in front of the moon, I was sort of fascinated, and I kept watching. But then I tried to get Barney to look, I wanted him to see it before it got away from the face of the moon. But he kept saying, oh, it's a satellite. Doctor, are you referring to Telstar or Echo, that sort of thing? Betty, yes. And Barney said it was just a satellite. And he was over by the car, and by the time he got back it had gone from in front of the moon. But he did look at it, and then he looked at it for a few seconds and gave the binoculars back to me. Doctor, you said it had an odd shape. Did you? Betty, yes. Doctor, how would you describe this shape? Round? Shaped like anything you know? A plane? Betty, no. Not like a plane. All I could think of, like a cigar. Doctor, like a cigar? Betty, yes. It was long, and there weren't any wings. And it was going sideways. You know, like a cigar. It was going from the left to the right. It 143, was just like holding a cigar up in front of the moon, with all these lights flashing around it. So then Barney looked at it, and I took the binoculars and looked again and gave them back to him. And then I went over and put Dilsey in the car and got in the car myself and shut the door. And then Barney came over and got in the car, and he said, they've seen us, and they're coming this way. And I laughed and asked him if he had watched Twilight Zone recently on TV. And he didn't say anything. Doctor, why did you mention Twilight Zone? B-E-T-T-Y. Because the idea was fantastic. Doctor, had there been anything like this on Twilight Zone? B-E-T-T-Y, I don't know. I never see Twilight Zone. But I had heard people talk about this program, and I always was under the impression that it was a way out type of thing. And so when he said that they had seen us, and that they were swinging around and coming in our direction, I thought his imagination was being overactive. Doctor, did he have binoculars at the time? Betty, left him standing on the edge of this parking area, looking at this thing when I took Dklsai, and she and I got in the car. And I sat down and waited for him to finish looking. And this is when he came back and said that it had turned around and was coming toward us. Doctor, did you look 2 seconds if it was doing that? D. Etty, not at that moment. I thought this was sort of, I didn't know. Well, B. Arnie kept saying that it was headed toward us. So I thought, well, one don't know what gave him this idea, but I was beginning to get a little curious why he felt this. So I picked up the binoculars, and at first I couldn't find it, couldn't find the object. But then I did see it. And I could see it was getting closer to us and was coming in. And it was still far, far away, and even when it was coming in, it still looked like a star. It was a solid light type of thing. And then, when I would take the binoculars down and look at it, it was just like a star coming in closer. An echo of many more reports in NICAP and Air Force files. But then when I looked at it through the binoculars, it would, of course, appear to be much bigger. But it was flying in a very odd way. And this is what I was all excited about. Doctor, what do you mean by odd way? B. Etty, well, you know how an airplane flies along in a straight line? It wasn't flying like that. It was turning, it was rotating. And it would go along in a straight line for a short, just a short distance, and then would tip over on its side, and go up. Doctor, well, let's see. It was shaped like a cigar, you say. B-E-T-T-Y, yes. Doctor, did it fly like it was a cigar going along? Like an arrow? B-E-T-T-Y, this is the way it looked. Doctor, when it tipped over, what did it do? How did it tip? B-E-T-T-Y, well, all right. You take a cigar and you lay it flat on the desk. Now you stand the cigar up on one end. Right straight up and down. This is what this did. And in the meanwhile, it gave the appearance of spinning all the time. Other reports of this nature indicate that the cigar shape, as in Barney's case, is an indication of a disc that is seen in profile. 145, Doctor, was it turning on L long axis? B-E-T-T, yes. It would go along straight, and then it would suddenly go right up straight. And then it would flatten horizontally. And then it would drop down straight. This seemed to be the overall pattern. It wasn't done in an exactly precise way. It would jerk out. It would flatten out. So it was sort of, it wasn't smoothly done. And as they got closer, there seemed to be more of this jumping back and forth in the sky. And then it followed us for a long time. And Barney W. was driving, and I was watching this almost completely, and the way it was flying, I thought maybe it was the vibrations of the car that was causing it to look this way. Doctor, you mean this jumping effect? B-E-T-T-Y, yes. I thought maybe the vibrations of the car was giving the effect. And so, I was keeping asking Barney to stop the car and look at it. And he would stop and say he couldn't see it flying this way, while I could. And so then I would look at other objects, like a star, to see if it would give this appearance. And it wouldn't. I kept trying to figure out, I kept saying, nothing flies like this, so it's something I'm doing to make this idea that it's flying like this. Everything else I looked at was all right. It didn't jump around. It was just THS one object. We kept starting and stopping and looking at it. And we would drive along. Now when we got by Cannon Mountain, this is where the tramway is. Doctor, Lai needs to make an adjustment of the tape recorder. All I, right, will stop there now. You will not hear anything speak to you again. You will be perfectly at ease. Li completes the adjustment. Further until, A-L-L-R-I-G-H-T, Betty. Continue now where you left off. She continues at exactly that point, J.6, UFO as seen by Betty Hill in First Encounter.